Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody. Today we are going to take a look at Jupiter-Uranus from the collective, historical, mundane standpoint one last time. I did two parts in a series that I've been working on last week. You don't have to have watched these in order, but we are going to look at the correlation today between Jupiter-Uranus dynamics and the collective expression of iconic events and cultural breakthroughs, which is a really unique part of how Jupiter and Uranus show up in terms of the collective expression of the planetary energies. As we go along, and I read you one last passage from Richard Tarnas's Cosmos and Psyche, I will also be offering some reflections on how these same themes show up in our personal lives. Because sometimes we think, oh, there's this collective expression and then there's a personal expression, and the two don't have anything to do with one another. But I think you'll find today that we're going to make some really meaningful connections between iconic moments and cultural breakthroughs that we see in the collective around Jupiter-Uranus events and the correlating types of events that we see in our personal lives. So anyway, that's our goal for today. It'll be the last part of this series. We're going to refresh on horoscopes this week as the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction comes through on the 20th. We are also going to be spending more time with Jupiter-Uranus from a few different points of view as the week goes on. So we're just sort of wrapping up our exploration of Jupiter-Uranus on the collective historical level today. Anyway, before we get into it, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments and reflections. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a story to share with Jupiter-Uranus this week or next, use the hashtag grabbed. Tell us the name of the transit at Jupiter-Uranus and then tell us your story. If you prefer, you could email it to us, grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. We're going to be aggregating and sharing some stories from this Jupiter-Uranus season probably in the next month or two. Anyway, you can find a transcript of any of my daily talks, including today's, on the website, nightlightastrology.com. A couple of promotions before we get started today. I'll take you over to my wife's website, which is skyhouseherbs.com. When you go over to skyhouseherbs.com, here, I'll put it up on the screen, www.skyhouseherbs.com. Go over to the courses page, click on Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship. The Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship starts April 24th. It is not too late to sign up if you want to study herbal medicine over the course of the next year. It is all remote, so you can study it at your own pace. And then there are study sessions where you get together in group and ask questions and review material covered in the recordings. A really nice program starts on April 24th. Be sure to check that out. The other thing that I am promoting right now are the upcoming live talks. So if you go to our events page, we have three new live talks posted. The live talk for the month is Uranus in Love, which is this Thursday. So we have a talk on Pluto in Love and Neptune in Love already cataloged. You can find those on the shop page, or you can purchase them on this live talk page as well. Uranus in Love looks at the combinations of Uranus in the birth chart that lead to Uranus participating in the significations of love and relationships. We're also going to be looking at Uranus transits to the birth chart and how they affect love and relationships. This is April 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. Register, you get the link to join us for the live webinar. If you can't attend, you get the recording link sent afterward. A couple of new talks posted. Neptune in Aries. We are getting to the point next year where Neptune will be entering Aries. So this is a class on the significations, archetypal significations of Neptune in Aries and what we might expect from this new era of Neptune moving into the next sign. Although it's still a year away, it's a good time to start processing this as Neptune reaches the critical 29th degree of Pisces this spring. It will turn retrograde before it enters Aries, but this is going to be a great talk. The 12th house on June 13th, The World We Struggle to See. This is going to be a talk that is focused on the 12th house and how to understand and sort of decode the meaning and healing potential of the 12th house in your birth chart. And then in July, we're going to be sneak previewing Uranus into Gemini and the archetypal significations of that planet, which also does not move into Gemini until 2025, but we're going to be looking at this as a preview of another major outer planetary shift. So anyway, all of those talks are coming up. Check them out. You can register. They all work in the same way. And then when you go to the courses page, first year course, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, begins on June 16th. If you stick around after today's video, you can find an informational video where I delve into the class in more detail. And the main thing to know, it's 30 classes on the year. They are all held via webinar, but they are also recorded, so you can take it at your own pace or attend live. We have breakout study sessions led by tutoring staff in between major units of study. 12 additional guest lectures. We have a group forum discussion staffed with tutors. It is a very well, it is a well-structured and really in-depth program. You will find that the early bird payment is available. We have put a timeline on it this year. So you can use that early bird payment all the way up till May 1st. After May 1st, the early bird payment will rise. That's the one-time payment. And the installment plan is also an early bird installment plan, which will also go up after May 1st. And then tuition assistance is available all the way through for anyone who might need it. We'll stick around at the end of today's talk to learn more about it. All right. So remember that Jupiter and Uranus are conjoining shortly. We have their significations. Today is Monday, the 15th. So they are coming together by Saturday. That is the 20th. You're going to be feeling this conjunction throughout this week very intensely and next week as well. We get a new moon cycle that starts not too long after. And we're going to, that new moon cycle in Taurus will also amplify the themes. That's not until about May 7th, but still, we have a lot of emphasis to come yet on the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. And remember, the conjunction is a seeding moment whose effects spread out over time. You're going to be feeling this for a while. Jupiter-Uranus squaring my natal Venus ascendant ruler, I shaved my head. I said, screw it. I don't care what you think. To myself, I guess. I just got sick of dealing with it, honestly. I was like, I'm so sick of doing my hair. Okay. On that note, we are going to visit one final piece of Richard Tarnas's research on the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic. This comes from Cosmos and Psyche, one of my best and favorite resource books on archetypal mundane astrology. There is a chapter called Iconic Moments and Cultural Milestones, which I have riffed off from for today's title. I'm going to read you some parts and pause along the way to reflect on how these historical or collective themes relate to us personally as well. But it's interesting to note these themes because you may very well see them at work around this time. And sometimes we don't even notice it until a little bit further down the road. Maybe a year from now or 2 years from now, we look back and we go, oh my God, look at what that was all about. But anyway, Iconic Moments and Cultural Milestones. Correlations with the Jupiter-Uranus cycle involving other cultural phenomena, such as the histories of film, theater, painting, jazz, rock music, and the counterculture, and of specific fields of study, such as anthropology, psychology, philosophy, presented equally rich and instructive patterns of synchronic and diachronic events and milestones. To give a small indication here of some of these patterns, if asked to single out three films that had the most significant impact on the evolution of cinema, most film historians would choose D.W. Griffith's The Birth of a Nation, which is widely considered the single most influential work in the history of film, one whose many technical and aesthetic innovations established the vocabulary of the new art, The Jazz Singer with Al Jolson, the film with synchronized sound that revolutionized the motion picture industry and marked the birth of the sound era, and Orson Welles' Citizen Kane, a landmark in the history of sound film, with its mastery of many technical and artistic innovations that influenced subsequent filmmaking, much as The Birth of a Nation did in the silent era. These three films precisely coincided with the three consecutive Jupiter-Uranus conjunctions of the first half of the 20th century. The Birth of the Nation was made during the conjunction of 1914, premiering in early 1915. The Jazz Singer coincided with the next conjunction, its celebrated premiere taking place in October 1927, and Citizen Kane coincided with the following conjunction, premiering in May of 1941. Now, one thing I'm going to be doing, because you may notice that he's tracking subsequent conjunctions, I am going to be going back in time, back to the early 80s, late mid to late 70s, something like that. We're going to be looking at the last Jupiter-Uranus conjunctions and oppositions historically so that you can look back at your own biography, so to speak, and track them. So we'll be doing that in a future episode this week, just in case that sounds appealing to you. Each of these periods was highly significant for the history of film in many other regards. The sequence of Jupiter-Uranus axial alignments in the 20th century coincided closely both with specific masterworks that represented climactic milestones of the preceding year's developments and with the beginnings of new movements and genres that unfolded in succeeding years. The conjunction of 1940 to 41 that coincided with Citizen Kane, for example, also coincided with the birth of Italian neorealism in the films and published manifestos at that time of Rossellini, De Sica, and Visconti, Hope I'm pronouncing those names correctly. The very next conjunction of 1954 to 55 coincided with another extraordinary wave of film milestones, with the simultaneous emergence of both Bergman and Fellini as leading directors. The birth of the French Nouvelle Vague, I'm sorry, with the manifestos and first experiments of Truffaut, Godard, Varda, and Resnais. All of those names are unfamiliar to me. Maybe they're familiar to you. And the emergence of the British free cinema movement led by Lindsay Anderson, Carol Reese, and Tony Richardson. Okay, again, all names that I do not know. But if that means anything to you, great. The main thing that I hope you're picking up on is that when you see major breakthroughs and iconic shifts in the way we do things, think about things in art, film, culture, music, those are coinciding with Jupiter-Uranus dynamics, and that's the important takeaway here. He goes on, the immediately following conjunction of 1968 and 69, which was the triple conjunction with Pluto that we talked about in the last episode, coincided with an explosion of innovative and influential works in virtually every national cinema and genre, both established directors, and he lists a whole wave, and by extraordinary wave of new directors who brought forth their first films: Scorsese, Spielberg, Woody Allen, Raffleson, Mazursky, Foss, Bogdanovich, Pakula, Newman, Herzog, Fassbinder. Equally notable during this last alignment in the end of the 60s was the wave of so many films that reflected revolutionary or countercultural themes, or that centered on rebel heroes or anti-heroes, from The Graduate, Easy Rider, Alice's Restaurant, Medium Cool, Midnight Cowboy, to The Conformists, Adeline, 31, If, and Z. I will address elsewhere with more precision and thoroughness the remarkable clarity of the patterns in film history revealed by this cycle. Major milestones of the 20th century comedy, for example, were closely correlated with the Jupiter-Uranus cycle, from Charlie Chaplin's first films and his invention of the tramp during the conjunction of 1914 to the first Monty Python broadcast during the conjunction of 69. Identical patterns are evident for the history of jazz, from Louis Armstrong's epoch-making Hot 5 and Hot 7 recordings, and Duke Ellington's five-year engagement that began at the Cotton Club during the conjunction of 1927 to 28. Through the first recording of Billie Holiday, the emergence of Benny Goodman and Count Basie's big bands, and the sudden rise of swing, all occurring during the opposition centered on 34, to the beginning of the bebop revolution when Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie played with Lester Young, Kenny Clarke, Charlie Christian, and Thelonious Monk at Mitten's Playhouse and Monroe's Uptown House during the conjunction of 1940 to 41. And then the emergence of cool jazz with Miles Davis's Birth of Cool recordings during the following Jupiter-Uranus opposition in 1948. Again, maybe you are or are not a big fan of jazz or swing or any of the musical timelines that he is laying out here. The point is that when Jupiter and Uranus get together or oppose one another, like new and full moons of their cycle, you see tremendous breakthroughs and developments, iconic, groundbreaking, you know, defying moments where the story or the narrative moves forward in really compelling ways. We have major breakthroughs. We have a significant development that transcends previous limitations or understandings, expressions, where creativity and originality are surpassing what was previously known or thought of as possible, or even thought of as, you know, what's in or what's accepted. So also the history of rock music, beginning with the following conjunction. Remarkably, all of the five recordings that marked the birth of rock and roll took place during the 14 months of Jupiter-Uranus's conjunction in 54 and 55. Elvis Presley's first record, That's All Right, July 1954. Bo Diddley's first record, Bo Diddley, May 1955. Chuck Berry's first record, Maybelline, July 1955. Buddy Holly's first recording, 11 demo songs released posthumously, and Bill Haley and the Comets' performance of Rock Around the Clock in the 1955 film Blackboard Jungle. It was also early in 55 that Ray Charles recorded the seminal I've Got a Woman, often called the birth of soul music, a synthesis of gospel with rhythm and blues. Following Jupiter-Uranus opposition of 62 coincided with the recordings of Bob Dylan and the Beatles, formation of the Rolling Stones, three dominant creative forces in the musical culture of the 60s. These synchronistic creative emergence was part of a wave of cultural milestones that catalyzed many of the key movements of the 60s and longer Uranus-Pluto conjunction of that decade. And he says, the following triple conjunction of Jupiter-Uranus and Pluto in 68 to 69 coincided with what was, in certain respects, the climax of the classical era of rock, a 24-month period that brought a virtual Niagara Falls of creativity and many of the most celebrated works of this genre. All three of the Beatles' final album, White Album, Abbey Road, Let It Be, Rolling Stones' Beggar's Banquet and Let It Bleed, Dylan, John, Wesley, Harding, and Nashville including the songs Sympathy for the Devil, Street Fighting Man, Midnight Rambler, and Gimme Shelter, Dylan's John Wesley Harding and Nashville Skyline, Hendrix's Access, Bold as Love, Electric Ladyland, and the Titanic Star-Spangled Banner at Woodstock, The Who's rock opera Tommy, Cream's Wheels of Fire with Eric Clapton's masterful Crossroads, The Grateful Dead's Live Dead, Big Brother and the Holding Company's Cheap Thrills with Janis Joplin, the band's music from Big Pink and the Band, the incredible string band's The Hangman's Beautiful Daughter, Van Morrison's Astral Weeks, John Mayall's The Turning Point, the birth of reggae in Jamaica with the Maytals' Do the Reggae, and Miles Davis's landmark jazz rock fusion recordings In a Silent Way and Bitches Brew. I mean, that's incredible, right? I mean, though now we're starting to talk my language. That's the kind of music I really love. And, gosh, that's the music I was raised on in terms of what my parents were also coming up with. You know, they were born in the 50s, so they were, you know, late teens in the late 60s. It's interesting to me that one of the things that happens at the end of the 60s is you get Jupiter, Uranus, and Pluto. And so you have this kind of Dionysian release of pent-up energy, which is emblematic of also the psychedelic revolution, Woodstock, the release of pent-up sexual energy, free love. So that moment is a little different than typical Jupiter-Uranus moments insofar as Pluto is also aligned. But anyway, he goes on and says, you can follow the ongoing sequence through subsequent Jupiter-Uranus alignments after the 60s. For example, the opposition of 75 and 6 coincided precisely with the emergence of punk rock, Patti Smith, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, the Ramones, and New Wave, Talking Heads, the Cars, as well as the founding of U2. And then he goes on and on. I mean, I'm not going to read through everything here because it literally just goes on and on. But it is really, really amazing. He goes on to talk about poetry and literature and film for pages. Here's one that you will find interesting. He talks about actually like sports a little bit. I'll just mention this. To these could be added comparable moments from the history of sports, such as Babe Ruth's hitting 60 home runs in one season through the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction of 27, or 14 years later during the immediately following conjunction in 1941, Joe DiMaggio setting his equally famous and still standing record of getting a hit in 56 consecutive games, or more recently, Tiger Woods' historic performance in winning the Masters Golf Tournament with a record-breaking score during the most recent Jupiter-Uranus conjunction of 97. This was back when he wrote it. A related category of cultural phenomena that show a far more than random correlation with the Jupiter-Uranus cycles comprises celebrated first meetings of major cultural figures that mark the beginning of culturally significant personal associations that have become iconic in the collective imagination. Freud and Jung meet at Freud's house in Vienna on March 3rd, 1907, when the two men spoke animately with each other for 13 hours straight. That took place during a Jupiter-Uranus opposition, the one immediately following the conjunction of 1900 and the interpretation of dreams. Other culturally influential associations that began in coincidence with Jupiter-Uranus alignments include those of Goethe and Schiller, Wordsworth and Coleridge, Keats and Shelley, Chopin and Liszt, Pushkin and Gogol, Emerson and Thoreau, Marx and Engels, Verlaine and Rimbaud, Van Gogh and Gauguin, is that how you say it? T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound, and Einstein and Bohr, to name only a few. All of those great minds that met and whose meeting would start to comprise a breakthrough in their respective fields or some kind of creative synthesis that opens the door to further exploration all occurred during Jupiter-Uranus conjunctions or oppositions. All of this is to say, pay attention to who you meet right now and who you start working with and whose work starts having an influence on you. What you begin, not just in terms of a process or an action, an activity, a study, a job, but also what you begin in terms of the influence that someone else has on you and you on them at the time of the conjunction is a hugely underrated part of Jupiter-Uranus conjunctions. Because most of the time we think of them in terms of like, well, there's some iconic breakthrough or personal milestone, you know, with respect to my job, I get a promotion, or with respect to, you know, money, I do better, or maybe my health or whatever the case may be, but also pay attention to who you're meeting. Another thing that's really important is to translate all of this into personal terms. We can just say, you have to ask yourself, we all do, what does a personal breakthrough look like for me? Forget about your chart. We pay way too much attention to the specifics of the chart as though we're beholden to it. When in fact, if there's a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction happening anywhere in our chart, one of the easiest ways that you can track it is to just say, where in my life right now is there a significant turn of events taking place internally or externally or both, such that there's like a little personal revolution happening. And sometimes you don't notice it right at the moment of the conjunction. It might take 6 months or a year before you really start noticing it. But pay attention. Keep a journal. Take note of the important people, ideas, thoughts, desires, conflicts even that you're getting into around this time. And then imagine, okay, from this moment forward, we have the seeds of a revolution. That revolution is for me. Right now, there's a way in which we participate in other social and collective stories and so forth. And that dimension is important as well. But we forget to ask ourselves, we think revolution looks a certain way. And then we try to retroactively, sort of fit that to ourselves. What we should be doing is saying, what constitutes a radical shift for me? Because that's going to be different. It looks different for you than it does for me, than it does for everyone else. But you can think of like, okay, if the Beatles are recording the White Album, what album are you recording metaphorically? And maybe that's something as simple as I'm recording the album of, changing the way that I eat or changing the way that I think or studying a new subject. Or maybe there's a new person coming into my life and they're really shifting something about me. Or maybe I'm starting to appear in someone else's life and I have this role or influence, and to have the courage to fulfill that role or influence being something of a leader or setting some kind of example, that's new for me. I've never done that before. So, a lot of the times the words like revolution and paradigm shattering change, all these words that Tarnas is using to describe huge events in history can feel so alien or distant from us. But the point is that we each have a White Album. We each have Abbey Road and Let It Be. And they happen in these cycles. And you can almost forget it because especially with conjunctions, the seeding point, it's hard to recognize its relevance until you're a lot farther out, So one of the things we're going to be doing this week, like I said, is we're going to be looking at all of the previous conjunctions and oppositions so you can track them in your own biography. All right. Here we go. In such instances, we see that the form of Uranus-Jupiter vector in which the Uranus principle suddenly and unexpectedly opens up the Jupiterian experience of wider horizons, expanded experience, elevation and magnitude, a larger world. Captain James Cook's first voyage to Tahiti, New Zealand, and Australia during the Jupiter-Uranus opposition of 1768 to 69 is another example. The sudden expansion of horizons can be achieved by vertical as well as horizontal movement, the first balloon ascents, the first space flights, the first moon landing. In the biographies of many cultural figures, the sudden expansion of horizons often took the form of major turning points in which the individual moved to a new environment where his or her creative work and personal life unfolded on a profoundly new level. Sometimes this was a journey or an extended stay at another place that in some way exerted a significant influence on the person's intellectual or artistic development. So as you see, it's like pay attention to what environmentally is stimulating growth in you right now. So it was with Darwin's long voyage to South America and the Galapagos Islands began during the conjunction of 1831, or Tocqueville's famous 9-month visit to United States during that same conjunction in 1831 that became the basis for the prescient and still insightful Democracy in America. Here too could be cited Thoreau's building of his cabin at Walden Pond in 1845 during the immediately following conjunction. So also Voltaire's life-changing stay in England during the Jupiter-Uranus opposition of 1726 to 27, which profoundly affected his intellectual outlook and inspired him to bring the liberating aspirations of the Enlightenment he saw successfully embodied there to the continent. It goes on. Pretty remarkable. He goes on to talk about important times in the lives of people like Joseph Campbell, Picasso. I mean, it's just filled with, I highly recommend reading Cosmos and Psyche at some point if you haven't, because you get the feeling, you get the felt lived experience of history being the dance of archetypes. And it's just so beautifully laid out. I don't want to labor it too long because we've looked at a lot of text from these passages. What I do want to say is that there's one more part that I think is really fascinating, which is called Hidden Births. And you will see that in this chapter, he talks about, although Jupiter-Uranus alignments regularly coincided with creative and emancipatory beginnings, births of important works and movements and ideas, these beginnings were often, as it were, births in a stable, humble, and remote from the centers of world power and attention, in privacy and solitude, in a quiet study, in small meeting, in notebook, alone on a mountain path, by a pond, inside an individual mind, the interior castle. They were often unrecognized at the time by the larger public, and sometimes they were often unrecognized by anyone, even the creative agents themselves. Only later did the event or its significance become visible, indeed, sometimes much later under a subsequent Jupiter-Uranus alignment. So remember that births, revolutionary births, don't happen in one singular event. Sometimes they do. You may see events that are certainly characteristic of these big, flashy, brilliant, sudden breakthroughs. And that may happen for you personally. You may see it in the news. But the thing that's important to remember, as Tarnas points out there, is that many times these revolutions, especially in the conjunctions, are seeding moments that start happening in a quieter place. And it takes years for you to really see, oh, that was the starting point. It was right around that time. Anyhow, that's what I've got for today. I hope this was useful. Stick around afterwards after I sign off. You can learn more about the upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. And I'll also tell you more about how the new pricing structure and sale works. There's a sale that we're running until May 7th or May 1st, I guess it is. No, April 7th to May 1st. And I'll also tell you about how need-based tuition works if you would like a little help to make the program happen. Love to see you in class soon. The other thing I want to mention, this is just a little quick announcement. I have started doing short form videos on Instagram. I'm hoping to find some bridge in bringing them over to YouTube. But if you want to follow along, I'm doing a little bit, a couple times a week, I'm doing some reels on Instagram that give some short, sweet, concise insights about what's going on astrologically. And if you want to follow some of that short form content, you can follow me on Instagram at Nightlight Astrology. That's the handle there. All right, that's it. Stick around to hear more about the program. Bye, everyone. Hey, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends. But if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planets, signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice they have my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session, and then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology being bereft of its ancient textual tradition has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000-year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as, giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early, because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.